What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series. A Night at the Museum. Doctor Who Night by J.R. Southall, aged 44, Exeter, UK. First Doctor Who story, Planet of the Daleks. I wavered, you know, and I'm quite sure I wasn't the only one. I was too old for the latter Target books, and in fact, there's one of those books I still have yet to read, although I'm not naming it here. And indeed, it felt sometimes like I was too old for the latter series as well. So when Doctor Who died in 1989, I wavered. The BBC video releases were nice, but piecemeal. A story from here and a story from there. Half of them were soon to become stories of which I had a recent living memory, and I had no desire to purchase Legopolis when Invasion of the Dinosaurs was still unavailable. Even the magazine seemed not to know what to do with itself. By the time the new adventures arrived, my subscription to the magazine had lapsed, and I missed their arrival altogether. Not that I'd have been unduly bothered had I not. So I wavered. I lost interest. I drifted away. I almost said goodbye. I relegated Doctor Who to a box in the corner of the room, a box that collected dust and occasionally a smile, but a box that was rarely, if ever, reopened. But I kept those BBC videos, just in case. I continued on with a life that no longer had room for Doctor Who. Even the arrival in 1996 of an American television pilot did little to reignite the flame. The Americans didn't take to it, and as much fun as it wasn't the same programme as the one that had died. It was like looking at a reproduction that had picked out all the relevant points and yet somehow missed the point of what they had signified, and my wavering thus continued. Until Doctor Who Night rolled around. It was November 1999. And some things always hold true, for just as that box of videotapes could never be thrown away, so it was that every November I would still feel a little pang of nostalgia for the birthday of that something from my childhood that my adulthood couldn't quite leave behind. And the timing felt right. 10 years is a long time, long enough to forgive the indiscretions and remember the good times. They say that if you love someone, you love them for their flaws as well as their good points. The weird thing is, once enough time has passed for those flaws not to seem relevant, you find that you can actually find some love for them too. So when Doctor Who Night rolled around, I was ready. Ready to embrace even those aspects of the legend that had disappointed and distanced me at the first time of asking. It was probably the Dalek shaped like twos that did it. The documentaries were very pleasant, but seemed a bit like the rather more bland younger siblings of 1993's 30 Years in the TARDIS, a delightfully daft hunk of nostalgia that had nevertheless, in its lack of signalling a call to arms for production on a new series, failed to reignite my passion. Perhaps it had been too soon after the funeral and not close enough to the nativity. And the repeats of a creaky old Dalek episode, not even an entire story, and the misshapen television pilot in a tellingly very late night slot, didn't really cause any flames to spring unbidden from the ashes either. As for the Science of Doctor Who type programming, why would you want to draw lines all over the magic? But there was a trailer for a repeat of Spearhead from Space, and there's something about that story, both the televised version and the Target adaptation that preceded it into my fan consciousness, that won't seem to lose its hold on my imagination. The idea of it being on television again, mannequin-shaped autons crashing through the undergrowth in an incongruously poetic way, sent me right back to the 1970s and my childhood, my Doctor Who-obsessed self. I found I was mentally hiding from Davros in the kitchen again, just as I had been nearly 25 years before, and that was from nothing more than a trailer. And then there was Tom. I think the fact that the legendary Tom Baker had seemingly wanted so little to do with the programme during the 1980s had affected my perception of that decade's take on Doctor Who. It lacked in classic. The fact that Doctor Who Night had Tom in tow, and enthusiastically so, was a real tipping point. If the Doctor, that couldn't be bothered, could suddenly be bothered, then inside, I could too. But it was probably the Dalek shaped like twos that did it. I'd grown up with the notion that Doctor Who was all about the monsters, another reason to mistrust the 80s. And even if there was something a little disingenuous about that belief, the sight of the most iconic of all the monsters trundling around the television screen in a continuity link was precious. It seemed to ratify this change in the programme's perception, moving it out of the realms of the embarrassing and into the arena of the beloved. Somewhere, deep inside, the sight of those Daleks shaped like twos had a concomitant effect on me too. Less than a year later, The Robots of Death was released on DVD, with its laid-back commentary track featuring Philip Hinchcliffe and Chris Boucher talking lovingly, but not uncritically, about something I'd all but buried. Everything had finally clicked into place. I might have wavered, but I was back. From Ewan Who, contact has been made.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm JR. Rob, well, we've just listened to something, and in a few minutes we're going to listen to something else, but we'd better explain what those somethings are.
We better have, yes.
Yeah, so here's my question for you, Rob. This was your idea. What was your idea?
Oh, JR, this is an idea I've had for a long, long time, and I finally got around to asking you about it actually just recently. And that's, I've been a long-term fan and obviously contributor to the Ewan Who books that you've put together over many years, many different volumes, where Doctor Who fans talk about their experiences with the show, whether particular episodes or just their life with the show in general and whatnot. And I thought, you know what? I like podcasting, you like podcasting, we have a lot of friends who like podcasting. Hearing these stories in people's own voices, almost like an audio book or something of that nature, could be very cool. So why don't we take these stories, and maybe some stories that haven't been written for the books too, some more unique type tales, and start pushing them out as a podcast as well?
Well, do you know what? Somebody suggested to me a couple of years ago, why don't you do an audiobook version of You and Who, where you get all the authors to read their own contributions and stick them together, you know, as like a audiobook or something.
Genius. Whoever that was, genius.
Well, yeah, but the issue is there, you've got, in each of those books, maybe an average of 100 or so different authors.
Yeah.
Not all of them are going to have access to recording equipment. Not all of them are going to have the kind of voices that people might want to listen to, necessarily. Not all of them, by which I mean not all of them will be comfortable reading their stories out to a microphone.
True.
So to do an audio book version of it, I said, well, it's a nice idea, but practically it's impossible. And it never struck me to do it any other way. And then you came forward with this idea, and I thought, well, that's the perfect compromise. You don't need all the authors. You just need the ones who want to do it and who are capable of doing it, have the equipment to do it. Mm. And you can put them out one at a time or two at a time, depending on how long they are. And you sort of, it's sort of like a part work audiobook then instead. And the episodes will be nice and short. They'll probably be sort of somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes each. So it's the kind of thing you can sort of listen to at the end of the working day, or if you find yourself with 10 minutes free here or there and you just want to put something on that's pretty short. It's a nice idea. It's a really good idea, and I'm glad you brought it to me.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I mean, sometimes in my working day, it's nice to have a quick, short podcast as you're walking from an office to another office or something like that. It's it breaks up the monotony sometimes. Just to hear, just 10 minutes of something, just a slice.
Yeah. So what we'll have, for people who are not acquainted with You and Who, as you said, it's basically it's people talking about their sort of connection with Doctor Who and sort of stories about how they've visited Doctor Who, as it were, in a sort of metaphorical sense. It's not about what they think of Doctor Who, but how Doctor Who is connected with their lives, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly right. How it's really touched them over the years. And that can be in 101 different ways, which is the real beauty of the Beast.
Exactly. And it's sort of the essay that we've just had from me. And we're going to have another one as well, because they were both quite short. So we'll start and finish this sort of pilot episode with two essays from me.
Thank you for going first, by the way.
Well, that's all right. Well, I thought if anybody's going to go first, I suppose it ought to be me.
Yeah.
Especially if it turned out to be dreadful and nobody else wanted to do it. Then I'd have to take the blame for that on my shoulders rather than shoving it on somebody else's. But yeah, so I think both of those essays kind of comprise a sort of variety of different sort of themes through them, so people can get a sort of vague notion of what it's all about. Mm. And what we'll do is, for the first few episodes of this podcast, we'll make sure they're readings from the books, so that by the time people have listened to maybe half a dozen, if they've not actually written for the books, they'll get an idea of what the essays and therefore the readings should be about.
Yeah, that's right.
So shall we get on and play the next one? And anybody who's listening who'd like to contribute, either who has an essay in one of the books or who would like to write an essay that they can read out for the podcast, what they should do is listen to the first few episodes, listen to how it's done, record something in that format, and either get in touch with you or get in touch with me, either on Facebook or Twitter or by email if they know our email address. Let us have the file. Or ask questions if they want to ask questions before they create the file, and we'll take it from there. So there we go. So shall we get on and play the second little installment?
I think so.
Right. Well, thanks, Rob. And we'll be back again next week with you, Rob. You'll be reading something out next week.
I certainly will, yes. I think something from the first You and Who book I'll go for.
Oh, that would be good, to get a bit of variety in there. And then after that, we'll have various different readings from various different people, and we'll just see how it goes.
Absolutely. I think that's the best way.
Brilliant. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, JR.
What Lies Inside? Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS by JR Southall, aged 46, Exeter, UK. Favourite story, The Day of the Doctor. I have a copy of Doctor Who and the Cybermen dating back to 1978, the first inside page of which is utterly defaced by a full-page drawing in magnificently lurid felt tip. I would have been around 10 when this drawing was produced, and it wouldn't have won me any prizes for either originality or execution. It is dreadful. What is significant about it isn't the drawing itself, but the subject I had chosen to represent there. You might be forgiven for expecting a Cyberman, maybe a Cybermat. Wrong story, but that didn't stop Target from putting an invasion-style Cyberman on the front cover. Or perhaps even the Doctor or one of his companions, but no. The chosen image with which my 10-year-old self wished to represent the adaptation of the Moonbase is of the Moonbase itself. One thing we seek as children is a safe place that is also somewhere to escape to, a hideaway of some kind. Maybe a treehouse or den, or maybe even just a secret place built out of cushions and hidden behind the sofa. Somewhere we think we can escape from the adults, when in actual fact they know full well we are hiding there. But nevertheless, it gives our junior selves a sense of independence, while at the same time being within the boundaries of our parents' protection. The moon base in Doctor Who and the Cybermen, and in fact, most of the bases and installations visited by the Doctor during his second incarnation, is like an adult version of just such a place, albeit in this instance coming with the thrill of being invaded from without by the Cybermen. We return to a position of security at the end of the story when the Doctor saves the day and the moon base returns to being a place of isolated safety. For the Doctor, sanctuary is within the TARDIS. This is where he returns at the end of every story, and it is only once he is securely re-ensconced within its trans-dimensional walls that we feel he is properly safe again. But the TARDIS is also a place of magic, replicating that feeling from C.S. Lewis's Narnia stories that even the most mundane of spaces can be an avenue into surprise, danger, and delight. It's notable that since the revival of Doctor Who, its producers have played a game with the audience, whereupon with every redesign of the TARDIS interior, the audience has been teased prior to a full reveal of its new look. Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat are both well aware of the power that place exerts upon children and adults alike. The series' very first episode, An Unearthly Child, set the police box up as a mystery to be solved in its very first scene, and while a good 10 minutes of that episode might have been set in the TARDIS interior, as well as the series' entire third story, the magic has never been lost, and the TARDIS is still to this day almost as mysterious and magical as it was when we very first caught a glimpse of it, no matter which story we might have been watching when we did. Such is the hold the inside of the Doctor's time machine has on our imagination. One of the things fans liked to speculate about after Doctor Who's return in 2005 was the possibility of a bottle episode set entirely within the TARDIS, a modern successor to The Edge of Destruction. Such an episode was finally written and produced during the series' 50th anniversary year as what must be seen as a present to the fans, who promptly took against it and decided it wasn't what they wanted at all. The realisation of the TARDIS interior could never live up to their imaginations or to the memories of what they had seen in 1978's The Invasion of Time. I would, however, suggest that most 8-year-olds, and when I'm watching Doctor Who, I count myself among their number, would have been thrilled with Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS. This essay was supposed to have been written by someone else, but unfortunately, or rather fortunately, its author, Declan May, was rather too busy putting together his Seasons of War anthology to be able to write the story to accompany this episode that he'd planned to. Here's what he was intending to write. My pitch for Journey is about how, when younger, I used to fantasize about rooms and areas in the TARDIS, and then later, when my son Zachary got into Doctor Who, and, with his autism, got very, very, very obsessed by the TARDIS, and we talk about what else was inside it, elevators, cafes, a unicorn stable, a car park, etc. So, when we watched it together, it was the first time, as father and son, where he asked me questions, hung on to every aspect of the episode, and the only episode we both watched together over and over again. Anyway, something like that. From Ewan Who, contact has been made. You've been listening to Ewan Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The Ewan Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.